April Fool's play a trick on your brother day. Someone who will remain unnamed hid my sermon notes. I frantically ran into the office to not find them there, only then to discover that they had been hidden from me intentionally, again by a person who will remain nameless until a later date and time. Matt. That's my later date and time. Nate and you were co-conspirators. Yep. Co-conspirators, both guilty in the court of law. All right, welcome. Glad you're here. We are working our way through some Psalms this summer. And here in July, as kids are with us, we're going to have much more interactive times together in this space during this moment of worship. And so kids have got lots of stuff that they can do, but I hope that they also might consider participating with us along the way. And certainly students, you know, by that I mean middle and high school students, I hope you'll especially participate in this conversation we're going to have today. We're going to be in Psalm 77, and I'm going to pass that out in just a second so that we're all working off the same translation. You certainly can pull it up on your phone if you'd like. But this last semester of school, I ended up doing some teaching, for lack of a better word, of a geometry class of seventh graders. This was at my son's and daughter's school, and the school needed a little bit of help. This was a group of kids who were kind of working ahead of the rest of their class, and they needed someone to come in and kind of facilitate an hour-long, let's just call it geometry workshop. And I said, sure, how hard can that be, right? It had been 26 years since I had sat in a geometry class, but I knew what a circle was. You know, I felt pretty good about it. So we get there, and I quickly realize I'm in trouble, and so it ends up being a lot of studying and a lot of review. My most favorite memory, though, is along the way, you get to build a relationship with these kids, and the nickname I ended up getting, what most of them ended up calling me was Preacher Man by the end of it. They found out what I did, and they didn't hold it against me. One of the girls did, however, change her name first day of class as I went around and told them. She told me her name was Lucy, and all of them chuckled about that, thought that was pretty funny, which was my clue that something was up. And so after class, I asked Zeke, my son, hey, what's her real name? No, that's not her real name. Well, why is she telling me that her name is Lucy? And he said, well, it's because she thought it would be funny to be Lucifer and then have a short, version of that because I'm the preacher man. And so this is the little back and forth we had. I thought it was hilarious. You guys don't, apparently. I think it's okay. I thought it was funny, clever, a little risky. So anyway, geometry. What happens, what's the point where two lines cross one another? What's that called? Go ahead.
Intersection.
Yeah, an intersection, right? Intersection is where two lines cross, or maybe multiple lines cross. And this morning, I want to talk about an intersection, which is a geometry term and idea. I want to talk about the intersection of the past, the present, and the future. The intersection of time. The reality is that you and I, every moment of every day, stand at this intersection. And every moment of every day, we hold all three of those things, all three of those aspects of time, past, present, and future. Right, the past, we carry it with us, don't we? Memories, recollections, emotions connected to memories, good and bad, joy and sorrow. So much of what has happened to us, we carry with us. It's with us right now in this moment. It might not be at the front of our mind, but it wouldn't take much to recall it. We are carrying the past, or at least parts of the past, with us. The present is, of course, here, now, in this moment, and now in this moment, and now in this moment. The past might be, of the three, the hardest to hold on to, the hardest to enter into, because it's always shifting. but it's here. And then the future, of course. We carry the future with us all the time. Hopes, dreams, anxieties, and worries. And so in this moment and in every moment, we stand at this really interesting intersection. I can't do it because I don't have three arms, but, you know, a past, present, and future. N.T. Wright, in his book, The Case for the Psalms, says that standing at this intersection can be terrifying. Because when you hold the future, well, the future is uncertain. You have no control over the future. And so that can be pretty scary sometimes. He says, also standing at this intersection can be frustrating because things from our past that perhaps we would like to let go of, we would perhaps like to not have in our memory bank carrying with us, are there nonetheless, and that can be really frustrating. And then the present, again, you know, doggone it, it's never standing still. It's relentlessly moving from moment to moment. And all of that can leave us feeling confused about what to do and how to live. And so he writes about how we might stand at this intersection. And he points us to the Psalms. And again, today we're going to look at one in particular, and that's Psalm 77. Would you pass those out for me? I'm through JP here handing out this entire psalm, Psalm 77. And I thought I might pass it out like this because two reasons. This way we're all working off of the same translation, number one. And number two, you might want to make some notes. In fact, I'm going to encourage you to scribble on this piece of paper, to underline, circle, make, again, notes in the margins. There are pens in the back as well as crayons if you're more color inclined. So, because what we're going to do here in a second is we're going to read a part of this psalm, and then I'm going to invite you to turn to a few people around you and have a very brief conversation, and then we'll discuss it again very briefly, and we're going to do that four times. I'm going to break this psalm up into four sections, and so this is how kids can participate, students can participate. The stuff we're going to be talking about today is not PhD level stuff. It's stuff I think that most everyone could spot in the text or at least enter into a conversation about. So Psalm 77, it's coming around. I want to read the first six verses. Actually, the first five and a half, I guess it would be. And I'll read it through, and then give you a second to reflect on it. Mark it up, underline, circle, and then consider these two questions with a few folks around you. Is there anything that catches your attention and that you find interesting? That could, again, be anything. Just anything. Wow, that word, that idea, oh, that's curious, oh, I wonder, oh, I disagree with, oh, that caught my attention. And then the other question to consider would be, where do you see the psalmist reference the past, present, or future in those few verses that we're going to read at a time? So we're going to read again this psalm in four chunks, and we're going to have some questions for each one, each section that we're going to read together. So let me read 1 through 6a, and then I'll invite you to turn and have a conversation. So here we go. I will cry out to God and call for help. I will cry out to God and he will pay attention to me. In my time of trouble, I sought the Lord. I kept my hand raised in prayer throughout the night. I refused to be comforted. I said, I will remember God while I groan. I will think about him while my strength leaves me. You held my eyelids open. I was troubled and could not speak. I thought about the days of old, about ancient times. I said, during the night, I will remember the song I once sang. I will think very carefully. I'm going to pause there, even though I know your sheet has it broken up a little differently. So I'm going to give you 30 seconds to reread those verses we just read, and then turn to each other and just share an answer to any of those questions, one or the other, or both. There's no real set, determined way to do this. Just have a conversation about what you notice in those first few verses. Let's first reread it on our own, and then we'll turn to each other. So is there anything that catches your attention? What do you notice here? What's going on in the psalm? And then, where do you see the psalmist reference the past, present, or future? Turn to a few people around you. Keep the group fairly small so that people don't get lost and everyone feels like they can maybe have a conversation. And then I'll bring us back together in just about 2 minutes. So, what did you notice? Why don't we start with that question? Anything that caught your attention? What do you think's going on in the psalmist's life? What are they writing about? What caught your attention here? Again, the beautiful thing about this is there's no right or wrong answer. So, what do you think? Yeah. Well done, Joanna. Yes. So there's all three of those going on. Starts out about the future, then about the past, then thinking about the past and how in the past he thought about the past, and on it goes. Yeah, there's a lot happening there, and all of them are going on. Yeah, it's good. What else do you notice? Even generally, yeah. So the psalmist is like a 4 or 5 year old, perhaps. Yeah. Refuses, yeah. Asks for help, gets help, maybe doesn't receive the help. What else? Yes. Yeah, maybe to Joanna's point, you know, when we're in turmoil, it's hard to make sense of the present moment. And maybe that's partly why we see the psalmist going all over the place, thinking about the future and about the past and about what they did in the past towards the future. And because when you're in it, it's really hard to see clearly. Yes. Okay, it's a good start. It's a good start. Let's read the next section. This next section is the shortest of the four that we're going to do, 6b to 9. So 6b is this. 6b just means the second half of verse 6. So I tried to make sense of what was happening, to Angela's point, right? I'm in turmoil, and I'm trying to make sense of what was happening. I asked, will the Lord reject me forever? Will he never again show me his favor? Has his loyal love disappeared forever? Has his promise failed forever? Has God forgotten to be merciful? Has his anger stifled his compassion? So what do you notice, and where do you see the psalmist reference the past, present, or future? Turn to a few folks. Consider that together. What do you see? What do you notice? Ready, set, go. Our are somewhat unique in this entire psalm. What did you notice about the questions that the psalmist is asking here? What did you notice? What stood out to you? Yeah, yeah. So Jeff said the questions haven't changed. You know, the world has changed in many ways, but these are very relevant, aren't they?
So it's asking, has God's character changed? God who used to be merciful and compassionate and loyal, is he not like that anymore?
Right. Yep. Anybody feel a little uncomfortable as the psalmist is asking these questions? Like, are we allowed to ask questions like that? Hold on. You know, this is God, right? Can we do that? I think you're absolutely right, Kevin. The psalmist is questioning the very character of God. That's a bold move. But this is what the psalms seem to encourage us to do. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, that the psalmists over and over are inviting us to be honest and truthful about what we are feeling. Pretend like we're not feeling those things, but that God is kind of big enough, capable of receiving whatever we might have to say in our turmoil. Because when you're in turmoil, the world does seem like it's falling apart, and it does perhaps seem like God's character is changing. The psalmist says, well, say it. Get it out. Talk to God about it. Anything else? The psalmist goes into all or nothing mode.
That's kind of what you do.
That's right. Very normal. Yeah. The humanness of all of us is right here. The Psalms are unbelievably human. They don't try and hide any of that. Now, as I said, I think last week, that doesn't mean that everything that we find in the Psalms should be read as a systematic theology book that's dictating to us what theology we should have. These questions here are not meant to lead us to a place of saying, oh gosh, maybe God's character does change. We got to understand what kind of literature we're reading in the Psalms, and what the Psalms are inviting us to do is to enter into our humanity and to be honest and truthful before God, and in doing so, well, we'll see what happens as we do that. It's a great segue into the next section, but I do want to say this first. Notice what the psalmist seems to do in these moments, and we've talked about, or we've hinted at them at least. The psalmist makes two commitments. One is to be honest. And the second commitment you see the psalmist making is to remember. Let's read verse 10 to 15. Then I said, I am sickened by the thought that the Sovereign One might become inactive. So I will remember the works of the Lord. Do you hear the commitment? I will remember the amazing things you did long ago. I will think about all you have done. I will reflect upon your needs. Do you hear the commitment to remember? Oh God, your deeds are extraordinary. What God can compare to our great God? You are the God who does amazing things. You have revealed your strength among the nations. You delivered your people by your strength, the children of Jacob and Joseph. So a commitment to be honest, but also a commitment to remember. I will. That's what we find here in these verses. What else do you notice? Anything that catches your attention? What do you notice about past, present, and future? Turn to the folks around you. Have a conversation. Ready, set, go. So what did you see, notice here in verses 10 through 15? I heard you all talking, so I know you talked about something. Maybe it wasn't this. I don't, what? Come on, someone be brave. Be bold. That's right. That's right. You saw the past in those words. That's right. It's interesting. That phrase is both future and past. I will, it's a commitment to do something in the future, but it involves remembering, looking backward. Yep, that's great, Ruby. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, so Jeff said the past can be comforting if you choose to reflect on the right things. Yep. This is not a remembering for remembering's sake. This is a remembering that's meant to be transformational. Let me share with you a quote from N.T. Wright. He says, "When it seems as though God has abandoned Israel," which is what the psalmist is wondering about in 7, 8, and 9, "have you left us?" The psalmists look back to God's mighty deeds of old and claim them as the pattern of what will happen in the future as well. So that's to your point, Jeff. Looking backward helps shape how we see the future. It's a really important idea. All right, so let's read one more section here. 16 to 20. The question is, what event is being remembered? "The waters saw you, O God. The waters saw you and trembled. Yes, the depths of the sea shook with fear. The clouds poured down rain. The skies thundered. Yes, your arrows flashed about. Your thunderous voice was heard in the wind. The lightning bolts lit up the world. The earth trembled and shook. You walked through the sea. You passed through the surging waters, but left no footprints. You led your people like a flock of sheep by the hand of Moses and Aaron." Why don't you turn to the people around you and just consider together, what do you think is being remembered here? And if you don't know the answer to this question, that's totally okay. But what event do you think is being remembered here? Because it is a specific event, and I do see someone in the back waving his hands frantically. Yes, yes, sir.
Is it the part where Moses parted the Red Sea?
It is, yep. Dab away, Zeke, dab away. Yep. Anybody else talk about that? The Exodus story? And there's a couple clues here. 15, actually, the children of Jacob and Joseph. You know, you delivered your people. And Jacob and Joseph's children were the people who grew up in Egypt. And then at the end, right, you walk through the sea, you pass through the surging waters, you led your people by the hand of Moses and Aaron. So notice that the psalmist begins, as Ruby has said, with reflecting on God's deeds, a general statement, "I will do that." And it's kind of a general commitment to reflect. But then it gets specific as we go along, and the psalmist recalls something particular. And this is really important, I would suggest to you. Because remembering generally is good and fine. But there's something, again, if we're remembering in order to be transformed, in order to see our future differently, it's helpful to reflect specifically on what God has done in our life. To get specific. And so let me ask a couple of questions here as we close. And the first one is this. What is your Exodus story? I realize in asking that question, I may... I have to kind of throw in a few disclaimers here because you may read that and go, well, I don't have one of those. My life's been pretty normal. I've never passed through a sea. You know, God's never done huge miraculous things in my life. Okay, maybe that's true. But I would then maybe ask you to think of it this way. What would it mean for you to say, I will remember God's deliverance? God leading me, God delivering me, God renewing me. I will remember those things. What would that look like for you? What would that mean for you? What would be the story or stories? So this is where this morning gets hard, maybe for some of us at least, because we don't do this very often. We don't look back on our lives in this way. I want to invite you to do it, though, here in these next few moments. So this is on your own, to just reflect, how has God showed up in your life and renewed and restored and delivered? Is it providing a new job when you were kind of at the end of your rope at your current employer? Was it restoring a relationship that you thought had no chance of being restored? Was it giving you the gift of time with someone maybe you didn't think you would have much time with? Is it a relationship that has brought tremendous life to you? It's been just gift upon gift to you. Did you get yourself in trouble? You made some decisions that were really... You wouldn't make them again, but you did. And yet, over time, you saw God redeem even those choices. Like, where has God been present in your life? And try to be specific here as you reflect. Because knowing your Exodus story is really important. And it can help shape the way that you understand the present and the future. So, what does that look like for you? Going to take a minute or two to be quiet as we can with kids bouncing around and everything, to just think about that. What is an Exodus story from your life? What might you remember about how God has delivered you? Let's reflect on that here. Verse 1 tells us that psalmist has somehow ended up in a place of confidence and faith. I will cry out to God and call for help. I will cry out to God, and God will pay attention to me. You don't get to that place without kind of going through the valley, without wrestling, and without remembering. And so my hope is that we would be those kinds of people. That we will be people who commit to say, you know what, I will remember. When I'm in the turmoil, when my eyelids are open, I can't sleep, in other words, because I'm so worried about the future. I don't know what's going to happen next, or I'm so troubled by what has happened. I'm going to be someone who commits to be honest with God about that and who commits to say, I will remember. So if you've been sitting here over these last couple of minutes and feeling like, gosh, I really don't know what my Exodus story is, then this is your homework this week. This is your homework to spend some time, schedule it on your calendar, take 15 minutes a few days this week, and reflect on where God has been present and where God has delivered and where God has restored and renewed. Because when it seems as though God has abandoned us, we should be people who look back to God's mighty deeds of old and claim them as the pattern of what will happen in the future as well. You know, this is why we share this meal every week. Do you know that?